Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it.
Are you ready for it? I've got a very exciting announcement to make.
Go for it. Yeah.
I am starting my DIY journey today and painting one of the rooms in our house. Yes! How hard could it be?
Not taking away from any painter decorators out there who are listening, because I feel there's a lot of skill involved in it, but...
You're going to give it a go.
I'm going to give it a whirl. I've watched about, I say, 10 to 12 tutorials over the last week. I've got all my tools. You should have seen me in the local DIY store. I was like, I need sheets to throw down the floor. I've got to have my tape. I need a roller. I've got my paintbrush to cut in. It's called cutting in when you do the sides. Thank you very much. Yeah. And today's the day. So I'm going to document it because I think it could be quite funny. The worst bit, I think, is that Dozer was he was kind of supposed to be helping me yesterday and then that never happened. So I've got to drag all of the furniture out of the room, which can be quite entertaining.
Oh my God, please just set up a camera in the corner of the room and let us watch you, because this is going to be brilliant. Do you know what? I feel like you're really brave doing that. So hats off to you.
Am I? Do you think?
Yeah. Because whenever I've said to James, oh, I can't be bothered to wait, you know, to get someone to paint this room. Yeah. I'm just going to do it. He literally looks at me like, no way. Like, no, you're just not.
The thing is that we did put the feelers out, but people were coming back going, I can fit you in March. And I was like, well, that's 2 months away. Now that we've like saved, you know, I've tucked away a few pennies, I thought, oh, now's the time to do it. But if I've got to wait 2 months, I thought, I'm just going to crack on here. This is so me.
Just do
so
it.
So the
just
only thing I don't want to do, because it's the dressing room, I've got to get rid of all the clothes, because they're the pride and joy, aren't they, above the children. I love the clothes more. How are you, George? How was your weekend?
I'm good. Yeah, weekend was good. But also, I realised how much easier it is just having a five-year-old. I got to spend 2 nights with just Axel.
Oh, nice.
Our own thing. Gigi stayed with my mum, only because I was going to the hairdressers on Friday and it's like a full day out. And, oh God, it's so much nicer.
It's just easier, isn't it?
Yeah, you can just give them your full attention.
Yeah.
And I do try and spend time with them both alone if I can. Like, I have a Monday and a Friday where I usually just have Gigi while Axel's at school. And then occasionally Gigi will go and stay with my parents and we'll just have Axel and give him like some attention and love. Because I feel like she is full on.
Yeah, she's really full on, isn't she? But that's just, that is, like we always say, that is her. That is an age thing. We were with friends at the weekend who've got an 18-month-old, and I just felt so sorry. It was actually SJ. She's been on the podcast. Sarah J. Mee.
Oh my God, this child, 18 months. I'm thinking like... Gosh, that's gone
Ray.
So quick.
Yeah, she's 18 months, but she couldn't have a conversation, bless her, because Ray found the stairs and then was just walking out the room, back in the room, trying to get up the stairs, trying to get down the stairs. Right? And it was just, I just felt, so, you know, you just cannot talk.
No, you can't. I know. And then equally, actually, on Friday night, I went to see a friend who's got a newborn and we just sat and talked the whole time.
How lovely.
Like, it was lovely. And she was asleep the whole evening. I think she woke up for a feed for about 20 minutes and then went back to sleep again. And you know, when you're like, oh yeah, that is the time to go to restaurants. That is the time to go on holiday.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And then the cumulative tiredness gets to you, because that isn't all people's reality. Like, I remember with Kit, he was just crying all the time because of his reflux. But if you've got a baby that sleeps like that, you don't quite realise it, do you? Especially the first time round, how intense it can get.
That's what I was trying to say to her. I was saying to her, like, not like enjoy this bit, but kind of, because I was like, I know you're worrying. I know you, because that's the thing. She's literally worrying about keeping a human alive, which we all did. We all did. And it's very easy from the outside to be like, oh, this is wonderful. She just sleeps. When actually you've got a million things going through your head. And then someone goes and says on Instagram that it's the hardest age is 8. And I'm thinking, what? What? I thought we was past all of that. No, it's not allowed.
Well, listen, Isla's 8 and she's an absolute dream. So it just depends on the child, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
So another confession before we get into the chat.
Yeah.
I broke Dry January on Saturday.
Oh, that's all right. That's fine. Not. It is. January should not be dry. January should be damp, not dry. Damp January.
But to be honest with you, I wish that I'd like gone out in absolute style, you know, like swinging from a pole in Soho, but I didn't. I just had one Bloody Mary and one glass of rosé. So it wasn't even like I'd gone out and gone, way, give me all the shots. It was just like, yeah, fancy a drink today. So I did. And then I thought I'll get back on it. And then guess what? I drank yesterday as well. A couple of glasses.
I think it's fine. If you break it like twice a week, like two, like at the weekend, that's all right. Monday to Friday, maybe not, unless something fun comes up. But
let's make our own rules up with this.
You're right. Yeah, yes. I don't agree with Dry January. It's rubbish.
Okay, well, I'm all over it. I'm all over it. Whatever you say, George. Listen, let's get into this chat, because what a powerful conversation it was. And I really, really want everybody listening to hear it today. How incredible was our guest?
Oh, don't. Well, I actually, after we chatted to her, I was thinking about all of the things that she's seen and how she can just sit there and talk about it. And she did say, you know, you'll hear this in the chat, that she can separate what she's seen in her job to her home life. But now going back into work, it might not be so easy.
Now she's a mum.
I mean, gosh, like to get to that position as well and do the things that she does is amazing.
Definitely takes a certain type of person to be able to do, a really brave individual to be able to do what she does. Today's guest, a war correspondent, super bright, but like so down to earth.
Yeah.
And what I loved about her is she's so engaging. When she was talking to us, I was literally just, I couldn't stop watching and listening to her talk about the stuff that she's seen in Yemen and all the other pieces of journalism that she's done, all the other reporting. And yeah, it's just like an amazing human being. It's such a fantastic, fantastic conversation. George, who are we chatting to today?
Today, we are chatting to Nawal Al-Maghafi.
So it's Tuesday, and that means we are back with another incredible conversation for you. Today's guest, I'm so excited about this one. Award-winning journalist for the BBC. She spent a lot of her time in war-torn countries. She has won 2 Emmys. She's a mum to Nora, who's 6 months old. This woman is a total inspiration, and we cannot wait to hear all about her life as a mum and a journalist. Please welcome Nawal Al-Maghafi to the podcast.
So excited. I'm also quite nervous because I'm used to being the one asking the questions, but today I'm going to be a question.
Yeah, it's us. How are you? We just before we started recording, you was talking about you could hear a crying baby. And so tell us a little bit about how the last 6 months have been for you.
There's been a lot of ups and downs, as you know. You know, the first 6 months, the first few weeks were really hard. And then, as everyone tells you in those first few weeks, things got a lot easier. Today is a particularly good day because we had a good night's sleep. But there have been times in the last few weeks where we haven't had a good night's sleep and it can be a really tough day afterwards. But yeah, lots of ups and downs, more ups. And it has been the most incredible experience of my life. It really has.
How do you cope with the sleepless nights? Because I feel that's one thing that isn't spoken about before you become a parent. No one really tells you how hard and like severe it can get.
I know, it's so true. And I'm one of those people that like has to have 8 hours sleep. I would always time it. Like, I had to get home from work and I'd be like, okay, 8 hours from now, I can't wake up before that. And if I had a meeting the next day, it would get cancelled if it was less than 8 hours away. But I think you just get on with it. you know, loads of coffee. Mm. You have no choice when you're a mom. You can't do anything about it. Like, you just have to get up the next day and you have to function. And I think we have just gotten on with it. You know, yeah. And you start to like learn how to function with less sleep. And now 6 hours for me, I'm like, wow, that was incredible. I had 6 hours last night. I can take on the world.
Yeah.
Good. And you had a good night last night, didn't you?
Exactly. Last night I had 7. It's amazing.
Do you know what I used to say to myself when I was really, really tired? I used to think, I would stand there, I'd have a sob, obviously, because I'm such a crier. And then I'd go, no, people can run countries on like 2 to 3 hours sleep. You know, you hear like ex-prime ministers and expert, they're like, yeah, no, I only get 3.5 hours sleep a night. I'm like, if they can do that, I can like get dressed and get my baby out for a walk.
Yeah. It's weird actually, isn't it? Because I feel like there's been a real shift with that whole thing. You know, before you'd read like, you know, a diary of a CEO or an entrepreneur or whatever, and it would be like, yeah, I survive on, I only need 4 hours sleep. Whereas now, if you listen to people who are really successful, they're like, I make sure I have 8 hours, I start to wind down at 7, and I don't look at any screens. And that's where we are now.
And the thing is, like, I can function on 3 or 4 hours sleep, and maybe I can do something extraordinary on 3 or 4 hours sleep. I'm just a much nicer person when I've had a good night's sleep. And my husband will tell you that too. Like, he likes me more if I've slept.
Noelle, before we get into your life as a mum, tell us about your career life and tell us about all of the reporting that you've done in Yemen, where your family are from. Obviously, you were brought up here in the UK, but just give us a little brief history on your career because it's so fascinating.
So I've always worked in documentaries. I've been doing that for like the last 11 years, but I never went into conflict. You know, I never went to war zones. So I did a lot of feature films. And then it wasn't until about 6-7 years ago when the war in Yemen began. And my parents had actually decided to move back home. So they were in Yemen at the time with my younger siblings. They were like 8 and 10 at the time. And then a war broke out there. And it was, you know, there was complete lockdown. No foreign journalists could get in. And my parents were still there. And I was working for the BBC at the time, but I wasn't doing conflict zones. But I had a Yemeni passport that I hadn't really used up until that point. And they were like, oh, you can get in. And my parents really wanted someone to cover what was going on there. So they said, you should really come. You should be covering this. And so I went to Yemen, and that was my first ever war zone. And I reported from there. And then, you know, ever since, that's what I've been doing. I've been going to different places around the world. I've gone to, you know, I've done Yemen, Iraq, Syria, you know, different places. Wow. And it kind of just opened up. It opened up the door for me into conflict reporting. And it's really crazy because I'm like, I'm scared of dogs when I go to the park, but I report from war zones. And yeah, it's been incredible. It really has. So I've done conflict reporting, reporting on malnutrition and all the things that come with war. I made a film on child sex abuse in Iraq last year. Well, 2 years ago now, actually. I forgot about COVID and having a baby. And yeah, it's been amazing, an amazing journey.
And how do you, you know, go into these like war zones and see all these, you know, things that seem so alien to us and then come back to your normal life? How do you separate it? I mean, that's how, I don't know how I wouldn't sort of be really badly affected by seeing these things.
You do get affected. And I think, before having Nora, it was so easy to disconnect. And I think it's because it's a bit of a defense mechanism. If I didn't disconnect when I came back home, I'd go a bit crazy. And so when I'm on the ground, like I'm really focused and, you know, we really get into the stories and it can be really, really difficult at times. But then when I come back, I'm one of those people that I don't want to talk about it at home. Like me and my husband don't talk about what I saw, what happened when we were there, or the people I met and their harrowing stories. We just get on with life here. And it really helps me kind of leave it behind. I think that's a really horrible thing to say, but kind of just disconnect and disassociate my work life from my personal life. Like my friends, none of them do what I do. Most of them work in finance. And I find that really refreshing because it means we don't have to talk about it all the time. We can just talk about where we're getting our hair and nails done or, you know, just the other things in life. But now that I'm a mum, I think that's going to be a lot more difficult. Like I was telling Zoe, I find it really hard to even watch some of the pieces that I've worked on because I'm like, oh, now I get it. Like this is, it's just, it's, yeah, I think it's going to be really different.
And it's really interesting that you've said that as well, because obviously, you know, Georgia and I have watched, you know, a couple of the films that you've made, and the one particular one that sort of stood out in my mind that I felt really, really hard to watch. In fact, I was crying throughout the whole thing, was the piece that you did on the little boy in Yemen who was dying of starvation because he couldn't access the lactose-free milk. Tell us that story.
So that story was in 2016. And after the war began in Yemen, there was a complete blockade, which meant no food or medicines, like barely any food or medicines was getting into the country. So people couldn't afford to buy food. And also, there was such scarcity of really important things like baby formula, like you saw in that piece. And so this little boy, Abdulrahman, he was allergic to his mother's breast milk. And it's something that's so common here. You know, you hear mums saying like, oh, my baby's lactose intolerant. Mm. I've had to put them on Neocate or on lactose-free milk. Yeah. And you know, Abdulrahman was one of those babies. He'd just get really sick whenever he had his mum's breast milk. And so he needed lactose-free formula. And it was completely like non-existent in Yemen because of the blockade. And so this film was really about us searching for this lactose-free formula. I mean, how ridiculous does it even sound? Mm. Now that I know how common this is, you know, I didn't know it back then. I didn't even know what, you know, and it's just so ridiculous because Nora had to be put on lactose-free formula as well. So we just kept looking for it and looking, and we just couldn't find it. And as we're looking for it, this baby is not only just so uncomfortable with his mother's milk, but would throw up whatever went into his stomach. So was so malnourished, he was dying. Mm. And the doctors were saying that he didn't have long to go. And finally, like this doctor that we were filming was able to source it from Saudi Arabia, and we were able to help bring in boxes and boxes of this lactose-free formula. But that's like one baby that we were able to help, you know, like there are millions of babies in Yemen that need, you know, in the film, I think we have like an hour long film. There's another baby who had a fever and just needed this antibiotic because of this fever he had. And the antibiotic was non-existent. And we watched him die in front of us, like we filmed it. And now I'm like, oh God, you know, it's just, I just find it so hard to comprehend now. Like it's just so different.
These are things that we have like access to, you know, very easily. And actually, if you rewound to like 2016, when Axel was little, and I, you know, he had reflux, and I just, my biggest worry was getting a doctor's appointment, you know, on the same day. So I can't imagine how a mother or father would feel if they there was literally no way to help their tiny newborn baby.
Even watching it, I couldn't understand. Even though I was seeing it, I couldn't understand it. I couldn't understand how something like this could happen and why we're not seeing more of it, actually, because I think we all need to be more aware of it, that these things are happening, and actually it's not that far away from, you know, we're sort of in our bubble here of popping to the supermarket and seeing the doctor and having the access. But that was only 5 years ago, and I imagine it's still going on today in some parts. Well, it is.
And you know what was incredible about that film in particular is that after it came out, and I was so worried that no one would care because there is very little interest in Yemen, on Yemen, you know, here. But when it came out, I got tons and tons of emails and messages, and it was all from mums. They were like, I was holding my baby and I was feeding, and then I saw your report and I just have to do something to help. And like loads and loads of mums. And I didn't understand it at the time. I was like, why are all these mums, you know, why aren't like the politicians doing anything about this? Or, you know, people who have, but it was because they could really relate. You know, these people may be thousands and thousands of miles away and have completely different lives, but this is something that we can all relate to and we have in common, no matter where we're from. And so we launched an appeal, and so many people donated, and it was just incredible to see how many people got involved.
You just mentioned that there doesn't seem to be very much interest in Yemen in the UK. Why is that? Why are we not seeing more of what's going on?
I think it is because it's just such a foreign land, and we don't know much about it. We tend to not care more, but just be more interested in reading about places that we've gone on holiday to, or we may have known someone that's gone on holiday there. Or and with Yemen, we've just never heard about it before until this war happened. And so it's really difficult to connect. And I think that's what made that story different, is it was about mums. And so it no longer mattered where these mums were from. It wasn't about Yemen. It was about these mothers' struggle. And so everyone could relate to that. And I think that's why, you know, it got so widespread, that piece. And it did really well in terms of people watching it and sharing it and screening it. And I think that was why, because they found something in the piece that they could relate to.
Mm. Yes, because at the end of the day, we're all just in the same club together.
And, exactly.
And, yeah, it's it doesn't so matter true. Where you live, where you're from, who you are. It's like when you become a parent, you're just part of it. Right. I wanted to ask you, I don't know what sort of mum you are, but go back to Nawal, who didn't have a daughter working, and you said you found it quite easy to come back and disconnect. Now you have a 6-month-old baby. You're going back to work in 2 weeks. So tell us how you're feeling about re-entering the work world, and also how you're going to deal with seeing these horrific things.
I think, there's so much in that question.
we got time. You know, we've got time.
Well, first of all, I think the reporting I did before really impacted my motherhood journey when I first had Nora. So, you know, a lot of times after I'd come back from doing those pieces, I'd get managers saying, do you want therapy? Do you need to go and speak to someone? And like, quite honestly, it was really hard to see those things, but I don't think it had an impact on me at the time, or at least I didn't think it had an impact on me. And I was like, actually, I feel fine. And, you know, and that film is just one of many. I've gone back to do Starvation in Yemen multiple times since then. And it wasn't until I had Nora that I realized how sometimes things can have an impact on you, but you don't realize until something else happens in your life and it all creeps up. And that's what happened. You know, I had Nora, and you know, when the midwives come a few days later to check on your baby putting on their birth weight, Nora just wouldn't put her birth weight back on. She, for the first 2 weeks, kept losing weight and losing weight, and then she just wouldn't regain it for like 4 or 5 weeks. And I had the midwives coming multiple times to come and weigh her, and you know, they would reassure me that it was absolutely fine. They'd say, some babies, you know, they take a really long time to put on their birth weight. It's fine. Don't put pressure on yourself. Clearly she's latching. So it's, you know, just keep doing what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. But it just drove me absolutely insane. Like, for those weeks, I would wake up every few hours and check that she's breathing. And I was like, she's going to die. She's going to die like all those babies I saw.
Oh, gosh. Do you think that that was as a result of the things that you'd seen and the starvation stories that you told, do you think?
Yeah, because I'd seen it so many times. And then I thought, like, you know, I just felt, and I'm sure a lot of mums feel this, and it wasn't just because of what I'd seen, but I just felt like I was failing, because I just thought, I bought her all this stuff. She had such a pretty nursery that I had loads of time on my hands during lockdown. So, you know, I worked on her nursery. And the one thing that I need to give her to survive, like, I'm not doing it right because she's not putting on the weight. And then this midwife came, and I just burst into tears when she weighed her, because she weighed her and it was like week 4 and she still hadn't put on her birth weight, and I just couldn't stop crying. And she was like, you're taking this really badly. Like, you need to, you know, it's going to be fine. She's going to put it back on. She's put on a bit of weight. She hasn't reached her birth weight, but clearly she's feeding, like she's pooing, blah, blah, blah. And I just couldn't. I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I don't want to breastfeed. I want to give her formula. And the thing is, I was producing a lot of milk. So that's why they were really encouraging me not to go on formula. And I really did want to breastfeed at the time, you know, like, and I'm still exclusively breastfeeding, and I'm really lucky to be able to do that. But I was really adamant. But at that point, I was like, I can't be the one that's responsible for her not putting on the birth. I don't want it to be me. I just want to, you know, give her something. And so we had this incredible, I'm really lucky because I was able to have this nurse come help me for a few weeks. And then she was like, okay, that's it. Clearly, this is something personal that's distressing you. Your baby is absolutely fine. And she will put on the weight. Some are just slower than others. But okay, let's pump and give her the bottle. And I'll make sure she puts on her birth weight within 2 to 3 days, just so you can relax. And so we did that. And then after she was, you know, after she put on her birth weight, the weight thing just was always an obsession. Like I had a scale, a proper doctor's scale that I bought, and I would weigh her every other day and make sure. And I only really recently have I stopped doing that. And then I realized, this is as a result of the things I've seen and I need to let go.
We'll be right back after this short break.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
And I guess as well, like, you know, you would feel like I have access to everything.
Yeah.
You know, I can go to the shop and buy her formula. So I don't, like you said, I don't want to be the one that's responsible for her losing weight when I know that there's a choice. And we have a choice here as well, you know, like we actually have a choice.
Yeah.
You know, you breastfeed or you formula feed, and both we are readily available to, you know, most people unless you're having complications.
Yeah, it's just a mixture of things, isn't it? Like when you first have a baby, there's so many hormones and you're so emotional anyway, and sometimes you just become irrational. And I think I became irrational because I was weighing her, like she'd eat and then I'd weigh her to see if she put on weight, and I'm like, what am I now when I look back, I'm like, okay, that was ridiculous. And
no, but do you know what? I really do. I can really relate to that. And I think actually it's to do with potentially trauma from all of our past that we bring forward into our parenting life. For example, I had a bad eating disorder that I've spoken about lots. So my thing with both Luna and Kit was making sure that they had the right nutrients when I started to wean them. But I got so obsessive with it that I used to, do you remember, George? I used to tickle Luna under the arm so she'd laugh and then I'd put a spoon of food in her mouth. I mean, that is a shocking admission, but at the same time, it was driven by the fact that I spent 10 years not putting anything in my mouth. And I was like, I'm recovered now. I need to make sure that my daughter is feeding properly. So I was like, she needs to get the food in. She needs to get the food in. Looking back on it, imagine that, like giggling and someone going, oh, it's just an awful thing. Like, it's an awful thing to do. I feel really bad.
But it's because, but because in your mind, you think, I don't care how she's getting the nutrients. She just needs to get them. So this is what we're going to do. You know, obviously you're going back to work in a couple of weeks and this is not a normal, you know, return to work or a normal job that you're going to. Is there any support from your employer? You know, I can't imagine there are many women, you know, mothers doing the job that you're doing. So how do you get the support?
It's been like quite a journey. So I always knew I wanted to have kids. And the whole time, so like for the last 6-7 years, me and my husband's older than I am. And so he's been ready for a long time. Like he's wanted kids for ages. But I was always terrified of what it was going to do to my career. So in my head, I was like, babies means I'm not going to be able to do this anymore. Because that's the example that we have, you know, like all the top war correspondents that I admire, like none of them have kids. There are some that do, like Clarissa Ward is an incredible one on CNN. There's multiple others, Alex Crawford from Sky, but they're very rare. You know, most of the women that do what we do don't have children, and it's for a reason. And so I was always terrified. And then I got pregnant and it was COVID. So it was lockdown. So all my work meetings were like this on Zoom. And my belly was getting bigger and bigger. And I hadn't told anyone at work. I left it like quite late because I was terrified. I thought, I'm going to tell them and they're going to be like, oh, that's it. Her career's over.
Oh, God, I hate that you felt that. It's awful.
It's actually like now, you know, and it's quite ridiculous because when I told them, like my manager, was absolutely incredible. Like, he was so excited for me. He's just had two kids and he was just like, oh, this is great. Take all the time that you need. And when you come back, don't worry, like, we'll support you to keep doing what you're doing. But there was also like loads of other reactions. And, you know, I had one manager, not my manager, but like someone quite senior as well, say, oh, you're pregnant? I mean, I hope you don't mind me asking, but was it planned? Like, could it, you know, and I just thought,
my God.
And the thing is, you know, when someone asks you something and it's so, you're so shocked that your immediate thing is just to answer it. And then after you hang up, you're like, why the hell did I not call him out on that?
Well, I would have just been like, what do you mean? But what do you mean? What difference does that make?
I was like, yes, it's planned. I've always wanted children. And like, there's no reason why I can't have kids and do my job. And he was like, yeah, of course there's no reason. But, and then I just, you know, afterwards, I was like, I should have said, what the hell? Like, who asks
that? What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
Isn't it incredible as well that men would never be asked that? Men would never be asked that question.
No, never.
They would be like, oh, you can have your paternity leave, then you come straight back and you get on with it. And I'm sure there are plenty of male war correspondents who have children that just crack back on with it and there's no questions asked.
Yeah. It's like there's so many, and it's a really kind of that, you know, that became really apparent to me through this journey. It's like so many of my colleagues, they all have kids. No one asks them, you know, when are you going to come back? Are you thinking about a career change afterwards? Do you want to do more presenting in-house afterwards? I'm like, why are you making all these decisions for me when I haven't, you know, I haven't kind of brought on this conversation and you're already telling me what I should be thinking and how I should be feeling and what I'm going to do when I come back? And I actually found it was a lot of women, which is really unfortunate. But a lot of women at work were like, oh, so are you thinking about, you know, presenting in-house when you come back? Which I'd love to do. That's not the point. But I was like, no, I'm still going to do what I'm doing. And then they'd say, well, you're going to feel different once the baby's here. And I'm like, you don't know that. Yeah. And then you make me nervous and stressed pregnant thinking, oh my God, am I going to feel different once I come back? And am I going to regret this? And it was one manager who was like my mentor, no longer works there, but he was like, I told him, oh, I'm pregnant, but I'm not telling everyone because maybe I'll come back and actually not a lot of people will know. And he just flipped. He was like, are you crazy? Why are you not proud to be pregnant? You're going to, you know, it's absolutely fine. And you'll be able to do whatever you want to do if that's what you want to do, you know, and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. And then I told him about some of the women and he was like, some people like to deflect. If they felt differently, they don't like to hear that you're not going to feel that way. And if you do, there's nothing wrong with that either. If you do have the baby and change your mind, so what? And I was like, that's so true. Why am I putting so much pressure on myself to have to go back and go to conflict zones and all these things? And like, even if I don't, who cares? Like, my priorities are going to shift. It's going to be different. And we'll see how it goes. And actually, when I had her, now I honestly feel like there's more importance to what I used to do. I'm like, I really want to go and meet those kids again. I want to go and speak to those moms. Like, you know, that was so important what we did. And if I was in their position, like, you know, it's just, I really value what I was doing a lot more now that I've had Nora. And hopefully I'll be able to make it work. It'll be different, but, you know, I'll make it work.
I love that you just said as well that you'll have a kind of deeper level of understanding, I think, now as a mum. You know, you will now be able to be in their shoes and be able to understand how they feel about their child because you're a mother yourself. And that's the thing that, weirdly, for a very long time, I don't think mothers in the workplace have been conditioned to feel, that actually when we become parents, we're better equipped to tackle our jobs because we're better multitaskers. You know, we're probably better nurturers. We're, you know,
we can work to a deadline.
We can work to a deadline.
No one likes a deadline like the nap time deadline when, you know, you need to like do about a million things in a 45 minute window.
That's so true. I'm such a better multitasker.
But also, you know what? I think you were talking about the women who were sort of saying to you like, oh, you know, you're probably, are you going to do this? Are you going to do that? And it's sad that that's probably from years of conditioning. It's probably from their, you know, managers or mentors saying to them, right, okay, so when you come back, we're going to move you over to this because this is going to be better for you, and making decisions. And I think now we're breaking that chain, you know, hopefully people won't feel like that when they return to work. And like you say, it doesn't matter if you do feel like that, of course, but as long as it's your own choice and your own decision.
Yeah. I do think that like the things that freak me out and worry me about going back to work are the same things that worry any mom going back to work, and hopefully any dad as well. I hope that they feel the same way when they go back to work. It's like, oh, I'm going to really miss her. You know, that's going to really suck. How am I going to pump at work or whatever? You know, stuff like I went to New York for a couple of days for work 2 months ago, and she started rolling when I wasn't there. Like, that's the stuff I worry about. But going to conflict zones, we take so much, like we really calculate the risks and we really plan around them. I've never wanted to get myself killed before I had a baby. It's not going to change now. And I really think I'm just going to be more selective on this, you know, the stories I do. I want to just do the ones I genuinely care about. And I'm going to kind of plan them better. There's a lot of like milling about in countries sometimes when we do these things, because I want to come home to my daughter as soon as possible. But any mom doing any job, I think, feels that way. And it's got nothing to do about with this profession per se, but it's just about wanting to spend as much quality time with your children as you can.
I remember my first job back after Kit, and he was 3 weeks old, and it was a DJ gig. And I remember standing there in this dress, you know, 3 weeks postpartum. We needed the money. Like, Dozer was retiring from rugby, and I was like, I've got to do this. And I remember pre-kids, I would have gone to the DJ gig, I would have done my set, and then I've gone out after, drunk loads of cocktails, got really drunk, come back at four, and I literally did the set, got off the stage and was like, get me in a car, like I have to go home. And you just see it in a different way. It still gives you the pleasure and the enjoyment that you used to have, but there is a tiny little person at the end of that that's you just want to be with more than anyone else in the whole entire world. So it actually puts a different dimension. Maybe we're growing up.
Also, do you know what, so it's such a good point, because I think probably pre-COVID there's so much emphasis on how long you spent with your colleagues. So if you were the person having drinks after work every night, with you were seen as a good colleague. Actually, that's a prime example. So you did your set, you left, you did exactly the same job as you would have done had you left at 4 a.m. or 12 p.m., whatever time you left. It's exactly the same. But we've sort of been built to think that we have to be seen, to be there. And running home to your kids is a bad thing. Not at all. We're actually just using our time efficiently. And we're working effectively, and just not, like you say, milling around doing the extra things that actually maybe don't need to be done.
Yeah.
I think that's something everyone can take.
Like, no matter what profession, like, mums need more support in the workplace for us to be able to do it. And I think there's a problem with that. We don't get enough support. Most of us are embarrassed to say we need the help, because you feel like, oh, I shouldn't say anything. I should apologize for being late because, you know, my baby was screaming their head off as I was leaving the door or whatever. And we shouldn't be doing that. We should be saying, oh, I'm going to be late, baby's sick or whatever. I need more help. I need, you know, now when I travel, if I'm going somewhere safe and I'm going to be there for weeks on end and I want to take her, I should be able to say, oh, can you get me a bigger room because I'm bringing my daughter with me? But the reality is we feel like we can't. And that's the problem. We feel like if we say that, we're asking for too much, and they're going to think, it's because that is the reality. They'll give the job to someone else who doesn't ask for all those things. And I think once that changes, once you know, we do get more support and mums feel like they can, it will make a lot of aspiring war correspondents or financiers or whatever want to carry on working once they become mums. But the support just isn't there.
This is basically about a deeper level of understanding with regards to humans. For me, this is about understanding that we all need support, regardless of whether you're a parent or not. You know, we haven't really been heard, I don't think, for a lot of time in the workplace. You know, you're supposed to show up, you're supposed to be there the first, you're supposed to last, leave the last. And then, you know, what's left for you? And I think now, maybe hopefully since COVID, and since there's just, you know, people have lives outside of their jobs, and
maybe people are seeing the human touch a little bit more and the real heart of somebody. And actually that includes parents, but it also includes people who don't have children that actually might have been having a really rubbish morning and had a big cry and couldn't leave 15 minutes earlier than they said they were going to. Do you know what I mean? So I think if everybody just stopped and listened to one another a little bit more, we might make this world a bit of a nicer place to live in.
That's so true. No, I completely agree.
Guys, when am I going to become Prime Minister?
When is it happening, guys? There's no way for me to say now.
Sorry for Prime Minister, okay? I'll wear a hoodie every day. We just got so carried away with my Zoe for PM speech that we forgot to ask Noelle for her best piece of advice that she's ever been given, or the piece of advice that she would give to a new parent, new mum.
And a true fan of the podcast, because you reminded us, Noelle. We know that you definitely have been listening.
So I guess the best piece of advice would be, and someone said this to me, is that when you're having a really hard time, to, I guess everyone says this to you when you become a new mum, is to know that it does get a lot better, you know, and it really does. It gets a lot better and a lot easier. And tomorrow will be a new day and hopefully a good day.
Love that. So very,
and
very
products,
true.
Because we, you know, we love hearing about products. So let us know.
Products for me, the two top ones are white noise machine and a good snooze shade. And it was funny because I was listening to your episode with Alison and I heard you, Georgia, saying that you didn't want to be that mum that had the snooze shade on and the white noise walking down the And I'm like, so that mum with the white noise, the snooze shade, and I'm strolling her along the park, but then I see the other mums that tell the dog to shut up when they bark, and I'm like, I've got it all sorted. So and then I love this website called Whirly, which is, I think that's how you say it. I think it's the most incredible thing, where you can rent toys. And so I signed up 2 months ago and it's been amazing. So you pay £15 a month and then you can rent toys for your child and then return them like a library and then exchange the toys, which means we don't have loads of toys laying around in our flat, which is amazing. And then the last thing is the Hakka pump.
Oh yeah,
which was absolutely amazing when you're breastfeeding and you're engorged and half asleep in the middle of the night, and then you just take it out and pump a bit to relieve yourself, which was amazing. And then the food processor machines, because they just make life so much easier. I know everyone says it's a gimmick, but I hate doing dishes and I hate having like four saucepans out to make a puree. So that's made life a lot easier.
Which one do you like? Have you got a particular brand that you like?
Is it called the Biaba or Biba?
The Biba.
Ooh,
I don't know that one.
It's really popular, but I'm probably just saying it wrong.
How do you spell it?
B-E-A-B-A.
Oh, yes. Yeah, no, I have seen that. I think they do the milk machine as well, don't they?
Exactly, yeah. So they do, like, it's the whole steamer and blender in one thing. And there's loads of types, but it has been amazing for weaning. So that's definitely one of my top pieces.
Noelle, thank you so much for coming on. I just loved it.
It was an absolute pleasure.
Oh, we loved
that. Thank you so much.
Good luck when you go back to work. Yeah. Let us know how it goes.
Thank you. And thank you for getting me through all those nights feeding. I'd listen to the podcast and it would really, really help me out.
Well, we loved having you listening from home. And yeah, like Georgia says, let us know when you're back at work, because we'd love to have you back on to chat about how it's been and
how it's
what
going,
you've seen.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I will, for sure. Thank you.
I just want to be her. I want to be a
kick-ass woman, seriously.
Yeah. Like, did you not feel like a massive underachiever when you were listening to her?
Jenna Awards in the background. I was like, oh my goodness. We might win Best Podcast Award,
yes!
But we won't be winning the awards that she's won anytime soon.
I love her. I love her. And I love the reflection that she's made on her life now that she's a mum.
Yeah.
You know, her baby's 6 months old and she's got to go back to work now. That's a massive thing for any mum. But then to go back potentially into a conflict zone. Huge.
Yeah, you can't imagine. But I guess for her, that is just her job, isn't it? You know, that is her job. That's what she does. But I think it just goes to show, no matter what, you know, career you're going back to or job you're going back to, all of us feel the same. We all have the same worries around childcare, about missing milestones, about, you know, just leaving the baby that you've spent probably every single day with. And no matter what you do for a living, we're all in this same boat and we all have so much, we all have the same thing in common that we just want the best for our kids.
Mm. Yeah, it was a beautiful conversation, wasn't it? I loved it. Yeah. Massive thanks to Nawal. We're going to be back, obviously, in a few days' time for another brilliant podcast. Before we go, though, we would love, love, love you to rate, review, subscribe and give the podcast a little follow. And a massive thank you to you if you have voted for us in the Glow Mama Awards. We should be finding out in the next month or so if we've won.
Exciting. So that'd be nice. And if you do spot any kick-ass women like Nawal on Instagram, or you know anybody who you think would have a great story to share with us, then please do drop us a DM. We're on @MadeByMamas and we're always going for your suggestions. And we will be back on Friday.
Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the wonderful Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.